Good morning. Welcome to Radioactivity. I'm Rob Lori. Well, coming up today, we'll open the phone lines later on in the program. But first, social media has been much criticized by conservatives who say that the social media companies are too quick to block their content. But USA Today reported just this week that a Google-funded report examined the relationship between white supremacists and social media and the internet. It makes scant reference to YouTube, the company's platform that many experts blame more than any other for driving people to far-right extremism. The report by Jigsaw, a tech incubator that has operated within Google for the past decade, draws from interviews with dozens of former extremists and describes how the internet is a breeding ground for hate groups. Study after study has shown that YouTube serves as a megaphone for white supremacists and other hate groups and a pipeline for recruits. YouTube's algorithm has been found to direct users to extreme content, sucking them into violent ideologies. We're going to hear a talk that the actor and comedian Sacha Baron Cohen gave last year to the Anti-Defamation League as he was given an award. And he talked about the dangers of social media, and it's a very interesting talk if you haven't heard it already. So we're going to hear that first here on Radioactivity today. Here's Sacha Baron Cohen talking about the dangers of social media.
Thank you very much. Thanks for everyone who stood up. Unnecessary, but very flattering. Thank you, Jonathan, for your very kind words. Thank you, the Anti-Defamation League, for this recognition and your work in fighting racism, hate, and bigotry. And to be clear, when I say racism, hate, and bigotry, I'm not referring to the names of Stephen Miller's Labradoodles. Now, I realize that some of you may be thinking, what the hell is a comedian doing speaking at a conference like this? I certainly am. I've spent most of the past two decades in character. In fact, this is the first ever time that I've stood up and given a speech as my least popular character, Sacha Baron Cohen. And I have to confess, it is terrifying. I realize that my presence here may also be unexpected for another reason. At times, some critics have said my comedy risks reinforcing old stereotypes. The truth is, I've been passionate about challenging bigotry and intolerance throughout my life. As a teenager in England, I marched against the fascist National Front and to abolish apartheid. As an undergraduate, I traveled around America and wrote my thesis about the civil rights movement with the help of the archives of the ADL. And as a comedian, I've tried to use my characters to get people to let down their guard and reveal what they actually believe, including their own prejudice. Now, I'm not going to claim that everything I've done has been for a higher purpose. Yes, some of my comedy, okay, probably half my comedy, has been absolutely juvenile. And the other half completely puerile. But I admit there was nothing particularly enlightening about me as Borat from Kazakhstan, the first fake news journalist, running through a conference of mortgage brokers while I was completely naked. But when Borat was able to get an entire bar in Arizona to sing, "Throw the jewel down the well," it did reveal people's indifference to anti-Semitism. When, as Bruno, the gay fashion reporter from Austria, I started kissing a man in a cage fight in Arkansas, nearly starting a riot, it showed the violent potential of homophobia. And when disguised as an ultra-woke developer, I proposed building a mosque in one rural community, prompting a resident to proudly admit, "I am racist against Muslims." It showed the growing acceptance of Islamophobia. That's why I really appreciate the opportunity to be here with you. Today, around the world, demagogues appeal to our worst instincts. Conspiracy theories, once confined to the fringe, are going mainstream. It's as if the age of reason, the era of evidential argument, is ending. And now knowledge is increasingly delegitimized and scientific consensus is dismissed. Democracy, which depends on shared truths, is in retreat, and autocracy, which depends on shared lies, is on the march. Hate crimes are surging, as are murderous attacks on religious and ethnic minorities. Now, what do all these dangerous trends have in common? I'm just a comedian and an actor, I'm not a scholar, but one thing is pretty clear to me. All this hate and violence is being facilitated by a handful of internet companies that amount to the greatest propaganda machine in history. The greatest propaganda machine in history. Let's think about it. Facebook, YouTube, and Google, Twitter, and others, they reach billions of people. The algorithms these platforms depend on deliberately amplify the type of content that keeps users engaged. Stories that appeal to our baser instincts and that trigger outrage and fear. It's why YouTube recommended videos by the conspiracist Alex Jones billions of times. It's why fake news outperforms real news, because studies show that lies spread faster than truth. And it's no surprise that the greatest propaganda machine in history has spread the oldest conspiracy theory in history, the lie that Jews are somehow dangerous. As one headline put it, just think what Goebbels could have done with Facebook. On the internet, everything can appear equally legitimate. Breitbart resembles the BBC. The fictitious protocols of the Elders of Zion look as valid as an ADL report. And the rantings of a lunatic seem as credible as the findings of a Nobel Prize winner. We have lost, it seems, a shared sense of basic facts upon which democracy depends. When I, as the wannabe gangster Ali G, asked the astronaut Buzz Aldrin, what was it like to walk on the sun? The joke worked because we, the audience, shared the same facts. If you believe the moon landing was a hoax, the joke doesn't work. When Borat got that bar in Arizona to agree that Jews control everybody's money and they never give it back, the joke worked because the audience shared the fact that the depiction of Jews as miserly is a conspiracy theory originating in the Middle Ages. But when, thanks to social media, conspiracies take hold, it is easier for hate groups to recruit, easier for foreign intelligence agencies to interfere in our elections, and easier for a country like Myanmar to commit genocide against the Rohingya. Now, it's actually quite shocking how easy it is to turn conspiracy thinking into violence. In my last show, Who is America?, I found an educated, normal guy who had held down a good job, but who, on social media, repeated many of the conspiracy theories that President Trump, using Twitter, has spread more than 1,700 times to his 67 million Twitter followers. The president even tweeted that he was considering designating Antifa, who are anti-fascists who march against the far right, as a terror organization. So, disguised as an Israeli anti-terrorism expert, Colonel Eran Morad, yalla, let's go. Disguised as him, I told my interviewee that at the Women's March in San Francisco, Antifa were plotting to put hormones into babies' diapers in order to make them transgender. And this man believed it. I instructed him to plant small devices on three innocent people at the march and explained that when he pushed a button, he'd trigger an explosion that would kill them all. They weren't real explosives, of course, but he thought they were. I wanted to see, would he actually do it? The answer was yes. He pushed the button and thought he had actually killed three human beings. Voltaire was right when he said, those who can make you believe absurdities can make you commit atrocities. And social media lets authoritarians push absurdities to billions of people. Now, in their defense, these social media companies have taken some steps to reduce hate and conspiracies on their platforms, but these steps have been mainly superficial. And I'm talking about this today because I believe that our pluralistic democracies are on a precipice, and then the next 12 months and the role of social media could be determinant.
You're listening to a speech by actor and comedian Sacha Baron Cohen on WMNF in Tampa, 88.5 FM.
Now, British voters will go to the polls while online conspiracists promote the despicable theory of the Great Replacement, that white Christians are being deliberately replaced by Muslim immigrants. Americans will vote for president while trolls and bots perpetuate the disgusting lie of a Hispanic invasion. And after years of YouTube videos calling climate change a hoax, the United States is on track a year from now to formally withdraw from the Paris Accords. A sewer of bigotry and vile conspiracy theories that threaten our democracy and to some degree our planet. This can't possibly be what the creators of the internet had in mind. I believe that it's time for a fundamental rethink of social media and how it spreads hate, conspiracies, and lies. Now, last month, however, Mark Zuckerberg of Facebook delivered a major speech that, not surprisingly, warned against new laws and regulations on companies like his. Well, some of these arguments are simply, pardon my French, bullshit. Let's count the ways. First, Zuckerberg tried to portray this whole issue as choices around free expression. That is ludicrous. This is not about limiting anyone's free speech. This is about giving people, including some of the most reprehensible people on earth, the biggest platform in history to reach a third of the planet. Freedom of speech is not freedom of reach. Sadly, there will always be racists, misogynists, anti-Semites, and child abusers. But I think we can all agree that we should not be giving bigots and pedophiles a free platform to amplify their views and target their victims. Second, Mark Zuckerberg claimed that new limits on what's posted on social media would be to pull back on free expression. This is utter nonsense. The First Amendment says that, and I quote, "Congress shall make no law abridging freedom of speech." However, this does not apply to private businesses like Facebook. We're not asking these companies to determine the boundaries of free speech across society. We just want them to be responsible on their platforms. Now, if a neo-Nazi comes goose-stepping into a restaurant and starts threatening other customers and saying he wants to kill Jews, would the owner of the restaurant, a private business, be required to serve him an elegant 8-course meal? Of course not. The restaurant owner has every legal right, and indeed, I would argue, a moral obligation to kick that Nazi out. And so do these internet companies. Now, third, Mark Zuckerberg seemed to equate regulation of companies like his to the actions of the most repressive societies. Incredible. This from one of the six people who decide what information so much of the world sees. Zuckerberg at Facebook, Sundar Pichai at Google, at its parent company, Alphabet, Larry Page and Sergey Brin, Brin's ex-sister-in-law, Susan Wojcicki at YouTube, and Jack Dorsey at Twitter. The Silicon Six. All billionaires, all Americans, who care more about boosting their share price than about protecting democracy. This is ideological imperialism. Six unelected individuals in Silicon Valley imposing their vision on the rest of the world, unaccountable to any government and acting like they're above the reach of law. It's like we're living in the Roman Empire and Mark Zuckerberg is Caesar. At least that would explain his haircut. Now, here's an idea. Instead of letting the Silicon Six decide the fate of the world, let our elected representatives, voted for by the people of every democracy in the world, have at least some say. Fourth, Zuckerberg speaks of welcoming a diversity of ideas. And last year he gave us an example. He said that he found posts denying the Holocaust deeply offensive, but he didn't think Facebook should take them down because I think there are things that different people get wrong. At this very moment, there are still Holocaust deniers on Facebook, and Google still takes you to the most repulsive Holocaust denial sites with a simple click. One of the heads of Google, in fact, told me that these sites just show both sides of the issue. This is madness. To quote Edward R. Murrow, one cannot accept that there are on every story two equal and logical sides to an argument. We have, unfortunately, millions of pieces of evidence for the Holocaust. It is an historical fact. And denying it is not some random opinion. Those who deny the Holocaust aim to encourage another one. Still, Zuckerberg says that people should decide what is credible, not tech companies. But at a time when two-thirds of millennials say that they haven't even heard of Auschwitz, how are they supposed to know what's credible? How are they supposed to know that the lie is a lie? There is such a thing as objective truth. Facts do exist. And if these internet companies really want to make a difference, they should hire enough monitors to actually monitor. Work closely with groups like the ADL and the NAACP, insist on facts, and purge these lies and conspiracies from their platforms. Now, fifth, when discussing the difficulty of removing content, Mark Zuckerberg asked, where do you draw the line? Yes, drawing the line can be difficult. But here's what he's really saying. Removing more of these lies and conspiracies is just too expensive. These are the richest companies in the world, and they have the best engineers in the world. They could fix these problems if they wanted to. Twitter could deploy an algorithm to remove more white supremacist hate speech, but they have reportedly haven't, because it would eject some very prominent politicians from their platform. Maybe that wouldn't be such a bad thing. The truth is, these companies won't fundamentally change because their entire business model relies on generating more engagement. And nothing generates more engagement than lies, fear, and outrage. So it's time to finally call these companies what they really are, the largest publishers in history. So here's an idea for them. Abide by basic standards and practices, just like newspapers, magazines, and TV news do every day. We have standards and practices in television and the movies. There are certain things we cannot say or do. In England, I was told that Ali G could not curse when he appeared before 9 p.m. Here in the U.S., the Motion Picture Association of America regulates and rates what we see. I've had scenes in my movies cut or reduced to abide by those standards. Now, if there are standards and practices for what cinemas and television channels can show, then surely companies that publish material to billions of people should have to abide basic standards and practices too. Take the issue of political ads, on which Facebook have been resolute. Fortunately, Twitter finally banned them. And Google, today I read, is making changes too. But if you pay them, Facebook will run any political ad you want, even if it's a lie. And They'll even help you micro-target those lies to their users for maximum effect. Under this twisted logic, if Facebook were around in the 1930s, it would have allowed Hitler to post 30-second ads on his solution to the Jewish problem. So here's a good standard and practice. Facebook, start fact-checking political ads before you run them. Stop micro-targeted lies immediately. And when the ads are false, give back the money and don't publish them.
Well, this is a talk from actor and comedian Sacha Baron Cohen as he was accepting an award from the Anti-Defamation League last year. And we've got a few more minutes of this talk before we open up the phone lines. Our phone number is 813-239-9663, and our email address is dj@wmnf.org. You are listening to 88.5 FM. Here's more Sacha Baron Cohen.
Here's another good practice. Slow down. Every single post does not need to be published immediately. Oscar Wilde once said, "We live in an age when unnecessary things are our only necessity." But let me ask you, is having every thought or video posted instantly online, even if it's racist or criminal or murderous, really a necessity? Of course not. The shooter who massacred Muslims in New Zealand live-streamed his atrocity on Facebook, where it then spread across the internet and was viewed likely millions of times. It was a snuff film brought to you by social media. Why can't we have more of a delay so that this trauma-inducing filth can be caught and stopped before it's posted in the first place? Finally, Zuckerberg said that social media companies should live up to their responsibilities. But he's totally silent about what should happen when they don't. By now, it's pretty clear they cannot be trusted to regulate themselves. As with the Industrial Revolution, it's time for regulation and legislation to curb the greed of these high-tech robber barons. In every other industry, a company can be held liable when their product is defective. When engines explode or seatbelts malfunction, car companies recall tens of thousands of vehicles at a cost of billions of dollars. It only seems fair to say to Facebook, YouTube, and Twitter, your product is defective. You are obliged to fix it, no matter how much it costs and no matter how many moderators you need to employ. In every other industry, you can be sued for the harm you cause. Publishers can be sued for libel. People can be sued for defamation. I've been sued many times. I'm being sued right now by someone whose name I won't mention because he might sue me again. But social media companies are largely protected from liability for the content their users post, no matter how indecent it is, by Section 230 of, get ready for it, the Communications Decency Act. It's absurd. Fortunately, internet companies can now be held responsible for pedophiles who use their site to target children. So I say, let's also hold these companies responsible for those who use their sites to advocate for the mass murder of children because of their race or religion. And maybe fines are not enough. Maybe it's time to tell Mark Zuckerberg and the CEOs of these companies, you already allowed one foreign power to interfere in our elections. You already facilitated one genocide in Myanmar. Do it again and you go to jail. In the end, it all comes down to what kind of world we want. In his speech, Zuckerberg said that one of his main goals is to uphold as wide a definition of freedom of expression as possible. It sounds good. Yet our freedoms are not only an end in themselves, they're also the means to another end. As you say here in the US, the right to life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. But today these rights are threatened by hate, conspiracies, and lies. So allow me to leave you with a suggestion for a different aim for society. The ultimate aim of society should be to make sure that people are not targeted, not harassed, and not murdered because of who they are, where they come from, who they love, or how they pray. If we make that our aim, if we prioritize truth over lies, tolerance over prejudice, empathy over indifference, and experts over ignoramuses, then maybe, just maybe, we can stop the greatest propaganda machine in history. We can save democracy, we can still have a place for free speech and free expression, and most importantly, my jokes will still work. Thank you very much.
Well, that was a speech given last year by actor and comedian Sacha Baron Cohen. He's famous for his Borat character, and he was raising the alarm about the dangers of social media when it's used by right-wing, far-right groups. Well, you're listening to WMNF in Tampa, 88.5 FM. You know, every time we get to the holiday season, I always think, well, in my spare time, which movies am I going to watch? If I find the time to watch a movie during my time off, there is a movie out there that I've been dying to see. I haven't seen it yet. It's called The Social Dilemma. It's all about social media, and it takes a look at the evil. That may be too strong of a word, but let's listen to the trailer for the film The Social Dilemma, which is a documentary about the dangers of social media.
When you go to Google and type in climate change is, you're going to see different results depending on where you live and the particular things that Google knows about your interests. That's not by accident. That's a design technique. What I want people to know is that everything they're doing online is being watched, is being tracked. Every single action you take is carefully monitored and recorded.
A lot of people think Google's just a search box and Facebook's just a place to see what my friends are doing. What they don't realize is there's entire teams of engineers whose job is to use your psychology against you.
I was the co-inventor of the Facebook like button.
I was the president of Pinterest.
Google. Twitter. Instagram.
There were meaningful changes happening around the world because of these platforms.
I think we were naive about the flip side of that coin.
We get rewarded by hearts, likes, thumbs up, and we conflate that with value and we conflate it with truth.
A whole generation is more anxious, more depressed.
I always felt like fundamentally it was a force for good. I don't know if I feel that way anymore.
Facebook discovered that they were able to affect real world behavior and emotions without ever triggering the user's awareness. They are completely clueless.
Fake news spreads 6 times faster than true news. We're being bombarded with rumors.
Everyone's entitled to their own facts. There's really no need for people to come together. In fact, there's really no need for people to interact.
We have less control over who we are and what we really believe.
If you want to control the population of your country, there has never been a tool as effective as Facebook.
We built these things and we have a responsibility to change it. The intention could be, how do we make the world better?
If technology creates mass chaos, loneliness, more polarization, more election hacking, more inability to focus on the real issues, we're toast.
This is checkmate on humanity.
That's the trailer for a documentary film that's out there called The Social Dilemma. And it also takes a tough look at social media. In addition to commenting about Sacha Baron Cohen and social media, I'm also interested in your recommendations for a good film to watch over the next 10 days as some of us take time off from work. What's the best film that you think we should watch? It could be political. It could be a Hollywood entertainment film. Could be an import from a foreign country. 813-239-9663. Email address dj@wmnf.org. Well, speaking of right-wing and social media, within the last 48 hours, two Republican state senators, Bob Steinberg of North Carolina and Amanda Chase of Virginia, through public Facebook posts and in subsequent interviews, have declared that President Trump should suspend civil liberties and declare martial law in order to stay in power. Both state senators have repeated Trump's baseless claims of widespread election fraud and various other right-wing conspiracies. Steinberg was reelected to the state house this year in North Carolina, while Chase is running for governor of Virginia right now. In a Facebook post on Tuesday, Steinberg reiterated comments made earlier this month by retired Air Force General Lieutenant General Thomas McInerney, suggesting that Trump invoke the Insurrection Act of 1807, deploy soldiers, and suspend habeas corpus in the U.S. In an interview with WRAL-TV on Tuesday night, Steinberg alleged he was just putting out there options that others say still remain on the table, although he later added that he would welcome a coup. He would welcome a coup, insinuating that there was a vast conspiracy working against Trump. These remarks from the elected officials come as Trump continues to defy Monday's Electoral College certification and Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell's recognition of President-elect Joe Biden's victory, pushing forward with his efforts to subvert the election results, claiming his loss was fraudulent and inciting his supporters against those who claim otherwise. In an early Wednesday morning Twitter post, Trump warned McConnell, Senator McConnell, that people were getting angry. After McConnell congratulated Biden on his victory from the Senate floor on Tuesday, Trump urged the Republican Party to finally learn to fight. Well, let's take some phone calls about this issue. Our phone number, or these issues, our phone number, 813-239-9663. And our email address is dj@wmnf.org. And let's see where people want to take the conversation. Let's go to Frank in Plant City first. Frank, thanks for calling. What would you like to say?
Yeah, hey, Frank Gray speaking. Yeah, so the speaker was saying that Hitler conspired to kill the people. Is that true?
Okay. Well, Frank, thank you for your thoughts. All right. Good to hear from you. Let's go to Richard in Tampa. Richard, what would you like to say?
I thought that was wonderful. Sacha Baron Cohen, I love all his characters, and that was so well said, the way he said it. That was really great. I'd like to become the first social media czar, like a drug czar or the mafia czar, like Giuliani.
Well, I think that's the danger, is like, you know, how much freedom do you allow? How much freedom do you take away if you own the private space?
Take on those big corporations and cut some of those heads off of those snakes like they really deserve it. I mean they're so far out of control. I mean, if you download their apps, you use Google and you use Facebook, you're tracked. I mean, your phone's tracked. Everywhere you go is tracked. And then if people want to watch you and find out where you're going, they know exactly where you're going. So.
Yeah, and they shouldn't have the right to do that. All right,
no.
Richard, thanks a lot.
No,
thank you.
We're in a Cold War forever. It's like the Russians are taking control of our country.
Well, I'm not sure it's the Russians. Apparently it's these big corporations out there on the West Coast. Betty writes this: thanks for airing Sacha Cohen's brilliant speech. He is so right on. That's Betty. If you sign your email, I'll read it. Lou in Plant City writes, the gentleman on True Talk today really made his points well. Sacha Baron Cohen surprised and impressed me as well. Thanks, writes Lou, who's in Plant City. And then Doug in Clearwater says, as a film to watch, watch The Fundamentals of Caring, writes Doug. I'm not sure what that's about. I don't think I've heard about that yet. Here's a suggestion for a film. They say The Trial of the Chicago 7, which features Sacha Baron Cohen, is on Netflix, and it is incredible, writes this person. I don't see their name, must be on here somewhere, but I think I've got a blockage here. Thank you for that. I want to watch the Chicago 7 film. 813-239-9663. Robin Myers writes on Netflix, look at My Octopus Teacher. It's an awesome documentary, a must. You can thank me later. I think that is about how smart octopuses are, right, Robin? If I remember the description correctly. Let's take some more phone calls right here on 88.5 FM. Let's go to Robert in Tampa. Hey, Robert, you're on MNF. Thank you for calling.
Hi, couple of movie recommendations. One of your listeners just said The Trial of Chicago 7. It's really good. And also on Netflix, I would recommend Highwaymen. It's the story of the two ex-Texas Rangers in 1934 who captured or killed Bonnie and Clyde, and it's told from the viewpoint of the law enforcement. And it's Kevin Costner, Woody Harrelson, and Kathy Bates. It's really good, really good period piece.
Oh, that sounds great. And what does Woody Harrelson play in that film?
He's one of the two Texas Rangers.
Okay.
The guy is Kevin Costner.
All right, that sounds good. Well, thanks for the suggestion. Hadn't heard about it. So, Robert, thank you.
Okay.
All right, so we're talking about social media. We're talking about the calls by some supporters of President Trump for the military to stage a coup and for President Trump to suspend civil liberties. We're talking about also films to watch over the next 10 days as some of us go into hibernation and get some time off from work. 813-239-9663. Let's go to Gino in Tampa. Gino, thanks for calling. What would you like to say?
First thing is one film. I haven't seen it myself, but it sounds intriguing, and that is The Assassins, about the two women who unwittingly killed the leader of North Korea's brother in the airport. That's one. I want to mention, is his name Mark Charles? I never considered that point of view, but he was great. I had to go home and listen to the whole thing. I mean, I just never considered that, and I just totally agree with what he said.
Yeah, Mark Charles was the American Indian leader, activist. We played his speech on Wednesday of this week. All right, Gino, thanks a lot. I'll look for The Assassins. Thank you.
Never considered that.
Thank you. And David in Bradenton writes, if you start asking these social media platforms to decide what ideas are shared, where do you draw the line? It's good that people should be educated, but it is up to us to determine what is true. I am not in favor of restricting ideas, even the ones I vehemently disagree with, writes David in Bradenton. You know, we know that the social media companies do spend some money. In fact, there was a company here in Tampa that did it for a while. Apparently, the jobs were horrendous, but they, from social media, excised depictions of sexual violence against children. They excised hate speech, and people promoting violence against ethnic groups. It was a job, so people sat in a room, looked at this stuff on Facebook, and then decided whether or not it should be on Facebook. And apparently, the trauma for those workers was incredible. So we do know that just even looking at this stuff takes a toll on people because there is some horrendous stuff on social media. Ruben in Lakeland says, I highly recommend The Social Dilemma. The piece that shocked me the most was about the higher suicide rates among teenagers. As a father of two preteens, I'm very afraid of what is coming. And then the best movie to watch, the fictional movie, is Scorsese's The Irishman. That's another film I haven't seen and I'm dying to watch. I think is it 4 hours long? I can't find 4 hours to sit down in front of the TV. Let's go back to the phones, and we're going to go to Raul in Tampa. Raul, thank you for calling. What would you like to say?
Yes, sir. Where is the evidence that the Holocaust conspiracy existed on that scale?
Where is the evidence? Well, I think the victims who emerged from the camps, I'd start there. I'd also take a look at the pictures. A lot of my friends' dads served in World War II, and some helped liberate the camps. And so when I was growing up in Pennsylvania and going to their homes, I would see the pictures that their dads brought home of the camps. Not just pictures of living people who were emaciated, but piles and piles and piles of dead bodies. So I think the evidence is out there. You just have to look for it. It's very easy to find. I would go to the Holocaust Museum. You can go to the Holocaust Museum in St. Petersburg and look for some evidence. You can look at the evidence at the Holocaust Museum in Washington, D.C. You can travel for yourself to Poland and Germany and look at the concentration camps and look at the exhibits there. I mean, there's all sorts of huge amount of evidence out there. Let's go to Remy in Lakeland. Hey, Remy, you're on MNF. What would you like to say?
Hey, good morning. Thanks for taking my call. Hope you're well. Kind of happy holiday. Great topic this morning. I'll start off with movie recommendations. Netflix, if you like horror or thrillers, definitely check out Best. Watch the trailers.
How do you spell that?
The Guest. Like
the guest.
Shows
okay.
up at your house.
All right.
It's a great thriller. Very original plot. Very unpredictable. Great acting. Great soundtrack. And Amazon Prime, Coherence, is one of the best science fiction thrillers in the past decade. No, not many people know about it, but Coherence. It'll make you think. You'll have to watch it twice, but it's a great film. Regarding social media, I just want to remind everyone with Facebook, Twitter, yes, they collect all your metadata, and yes, they monitor you because, you know, it's a quote-unquote free service, but in all reality, you are the product. So you sign that user agreement. You know, I hate that our metadata is collected, but folks, if you're going to sign up for Facebook or Twitter, you are accepting the user agreement, which does show that they'll track you or have access to your photos. If you don't want that, do a system reset on your phone and don't log into them ever again.
All right, Remy, good advice. Thank you. And I'll look up those films, The Guest and Coherence. Thanks.
Yes, sir.
All right, Remy, thank you. And you're listening to 88.5 FM. Let's go to Clayton in Tampa. Clayton, you're on MNF. What would you like to say?
Yeah. So for movies, because of COVID, haven't really been able to get many in, but I have heard from friends Tenet is a really good one. That's one on my list.
That's the Christopher Nolan film that everybody was looking forward to seeing in the theaters. And
But I actually work for one of the larger tech companies discussed, and so I think the previous caller actually nailed one of my points of it is kind of consent-based, and one thing that I always see it as and get to see some of the behind-the-scenes is, we often kind of call out maybe some of the bad but overlook a lot of the good in terms of giving the right type of information or giving good information. So I think it's one of those that get caught in a news cycle and often judged by, you know, congressmen or women that often don't know a lot about the technology as well. So just a point from the other side there.
All right, Clayton, thank you. Thank you for that.
Mm-hmm.
All right, good to hear from you. And let's see, I'm just going to ask people to sign their name as they send in an email. And this email comes from P-Man, and P-Man says, the B-Foreigners on HBO, science fiction from Norway is good. And he says, immigrants from caveman and Viking days and Victorian England times suddenly appear in the current day. So the B-Foreigners, writes P-Man. Noah writes this, Sacha Baron Cohen is brilliant. Thanks for playing the speech. I recommend My Octopus Teacher on Netflix. Anyone who loves the ocean should watch it. I think that's the third recommendation we've gotten for My Octopus Teacher. Jerome writes, Wind River is a tremendous movie and a subject that deserves attention. Is Wind River about the disappearance of Native women out west? Jerome, is that the one? I think I saw that. It came out a few years ago. And then Simon writes this, I stopped using GPS because of the military-industrial complex. All right, Simon, thank you for that. Let's go to Tom in Largo. Tom, you're on 88.5 FM.
Morning, Rob.
Good morning. What would you like to tell us?
Well, it's a beautiful day today, first thing I wanted to say. And I wanted to mention a couple movies. The first one would be... now I can't remember the name of it. Oh, I'm getting a blank here. Sorry. Cabaret. especially the beer garden scene.
Is there there a new version of Cabaret, or are you talking about the 1970s version?
Yeah, the original one. Yeah, especially the beer garden scene. It reminded me, listen to that Sasha Cohen thing that you were playing earlier.
Yeah.
Because, you know, him getting the people to sing. And I also wanted to mention, the other movie was Treasure of the Sierra Madre, just a great movie. But I wanted to mention also that I did meet a man who was in one of the concentration camps. So, you know, first-person news is always the best. I think he did some classes or something at the schools, too. He would go to the schools and do some presentations. And one other thing, one quick thing, the Supreme Court, maybe we could be a little more positive, thinking, you know, a lot of times people will grow into their jobs, and maybe that'll happen. Thank you.
All right, Tom, thanks a lot. Yeah. And we've had a couple of programs with Holocaust survivors on. And I did an interview 2 years ago with a cantor from one of the synagogues in South Tampa. And I did a two-hour interview with him. Maybe I should play that again for that caller who seemed to deny the Holocaust. 813-239-9663. Let's go to Jeanette in St. Petersburg. Hi, Jeanette. You're on M&F.
Hi, Rob. I will recommend, of course, The Octopus Teacher, because I will never eat, and I don't eat fish anyway, but I never eat octopus again.
Because they're so smart? Is that the bottom line in that film?
They have souls, just like every other animal has a soul. I mean, you can't deny it if you watch that movie. They can bond. They are smart as heck. They're amazing. But the other movies I want to recommend are Cowspiracy. A documentary.
That's a classic from a few years ago. Okay, Cowspiracy. And?
Our Life on This Planet, I think it's called, by David Attenborough. It just came out.
The new one, yeah.
And, of course, Earthlings. Everybody should watch Earthlings.
What's Earthlings about?
That's a documentary about factory farming, and Joaquin Phoenix is the narrator.
The Joker. Okay. Well, Jeanette, yep. Thanks a lot. Thank you for
You're
that.
You're welcome.
Mm-hmm. 818, bye-bye, 813-239-9663. Let's go to Mike in Sarasota. Hey, Mike.
Hey, good morning, Rob. Great show you're having this morning. I wanted to comment about Mark Charles. His presentation the other day was some great history, and I learned a lot. But his point seems to be that Indians and other indigenous peoples have been dominated by white Europeans. And I'd just like to respond to that and say that tribal domination is pretty much the history of mankind. And it's only tribes have only been limited in their domination of others by their capacity. And his people are just as guilty. I mean, they would do the same thing to other tribes if they had the chance. And as an example, Attila the Hun had colonized and conquered much of Europe. So
but Attila is a different geographical figure, different ethnic group. I mean, Mark was lamenting, I think, the fact that land was taken, was forcibly taken, and the Native Americans got nothing for it.
My point is that his people would have done the same thing to white Europeans.
Well, I don't know how we know that, Mike. I mean, that's an impossible argument to have. I mean, the facts are that land was taken, and not just a little bit of land, a lot of valuable land was taken.
Well, take a look at the intertribal conflict that existed between Indians in North America. They were busy often conquering each other.
Yeah, but are you suggesting that taking the land from other people is okay?
No, I'm suggesting that is what, that's unfortunately what humans do.
Okay, all right. Well, Mike, I think you missed the point of Mark Charles' talk. I mean, he was pointing out that we still live with the repercussions of stealing the land, and he says that American Indians are traumatized. He says the people that came here whose ancestors came here and lived on that stolen land. They're traumatized, too. Thanks for calling, Mike. 813-239-9663. Clint writes this. Marnie's Black Bottom just came out today. It's fantastic, writes Clint. I'm not sure what that's about, but Clint, thank you for that. And Mary in Sarasota says, binge on Queen's Gambit. Yeah, I've heard so many people recommend the Queen's Gambit. Thank you for that. And Tony writes this. A coup by an administration that is traitorous. Russia allowed access to our nuke info, and Trump has nothing to say about it, writes Tony, who's in Gulfport. Tony, thank you for that. And then Sharon writes, my favorite movie is The Meaning of Life by Monty Python. All right, Sharon, I love Monty Python. Thank you for that. I wish there was a new Monty Python film. I think that came out 30 or 35 years ago. Let's go back to the phones, and we're going to go to the person who's been holding the longest. That looks like Jose in Tarpon Springs. Hey, Jose, thank you for calling.
Hey, how's it going?
Good. What's up?
I'm going to go light on the movies here. This one I've rarely known, and yet when I recommend it to people, especially women, they call back and say, wow, that was amazing. It's called Draft Day with Kevin Costner, and features Chadwick Boseman in it in a smaller role. It's in essence of a football movie, but you'll find it once you get started on the first 10 minutes, you're usually pretty hooked. Also, The Highwayman was pretty good, and it should be noted that when the Bonnie and Clyde movie came out in the 70s or 60s, I believe, it had the same two characters in there, more as comedy relief and not what you would call a good look for them.
They were like the Keystone Cops, is that what it was? In the original Bonnie and Clyde?
Right, and it softened Bonnie and Clyde. This movie is meant to show the actual characters as they were. So, yeah, I recommend that one, too. And as an unofficial Christmas movie that's actually a Christmas movie, I would recommend the original We're No Angels with Humphrey Bogart from the mid-50s.
Okay. Great. Thanks a lot. Thank you.
Enjoy the season. Bye-bye.
Thanks, Jose. Let's go to Michael in Riverview. Michael, you're on. What would you like to say?
Yeah. Reading from the Almanac in 2005, it says that 9 to 10 million people, another 9 to 10 million people, in addition to the Jews, were killed in the Holocaust. I mean, how do they know that they're Jews, and what defines that criteria?
Well, Michael, I think this guy is calling up with different names. I think he's called four times. There were people, in addition to Jews, killed in the Holocaust, and that included people that were communists and socialists and left-wing Christians, people that were handicapped, people who were of the wrong color. So, yes, I don't know what that number is, but, yes, indeed, they were. And let's go to Andy in Dunedin. Andy, what would you like to say?
Hey, Rob, happy Friday. The Girl on the Train, I'm not sure how old that is. Me and my wife saw it the other night. It was a great thriller.
Yeah, that is. About 3 or 4 years old, right?
Yeah, yeah, very good, though. I also recommended it to you, and I don't know if you watched it, Cuba and the Cameraman a while back.
I've got it on my list, but I haven't watched it.
And one we just watched recently, My Name is Kalam, about a young Indian boy who pushes himself to get educated in a caste system that just kept trying to keep him down. It's a very cute, very uplifting film. And real quick, me and my wife still use flip phones. I don't know if they're less likely to get tapped into, but I feel a lot safer with a flip phone than having all my information on a so-called smartphone.
Okay, Andy, thanks a lot. Thank you for that. Jeff says, I saw The Social Dilemma. It was disturbing. In the end, I'm asking if getting people to fall into these rabbit holes is to just keep people watching so they can view more advertising, or do they really want everyone to be brainwashed, confused, and divided, writes Jeff. Hey, thanks to Cindy Philpott. She's been our phone producer today. If you want to comment about today's show, please call us at 813-238-8001 and record your comment on extension 115. And I'll play your comments back Monday morning at 11 o'clock. Stay tuned for Janelle. She's back. She'll be hosting the Midpoint program for the next hour right here on 88.5 FM WMNF, Tampa, St. Petersburg. But first, We're going to get the latest news from NPR. Remember, we've got great programming all day. Art in Your Ear comes up this afternoon. You'll hear the live music showcase, and you'll hear the Reverend Billy do his rhythm revival this afternoon. Here's the news.